Tonight's seminar is called Helping Your Kids Wait Until Marriage. And this is the second part of a series of community parenting seminars we've been doing. We really hope that you can make it to as many of these as you can. Last week's seminar, if you go onto our website and you go to where it explains about the seminar, last week's is actually there on audio, and also you can see the PowerPoint on there too if you want to go back and look at that. Last week's was on how to help your kids get good grades. Tonight's on helping your kids wait until marriage. This is just a really important topic because this is something that all of our kids are going to face someday, and it's going to be just a huge temptation for them. And so that's why we're going to talk about that tonight. Before we get going, let me just introduce myself a little bit, again, for those of you who weren't here last week. My name is Steve Nelson, and I have a heart for parents. I have a heart to just make a difference in the world. And in my mind, the way that you make a difference in the world is by starting in your own community and helping there. And so I wanted to help other parents. And I think also just to start in your own family. You know, it's hard to change the world if you can't change your own kids. And so to me, parenting is really important because of that. This is a picture of my family. That's my wife, Kathleen, who is right there. Those are my kids. And so we have from the ages of 17 up there all the way down to a two-year-old. Four boys, four girls. And so they're a lot of fun. And so that's one of the reasons I really have a heart for parenting, is just because we have so many kids. And also it gives us just a unique opportunity to counsel other people and give advice and stuff, just because if somebody says, oh, I have a three-year-old, my three-year-old's doing this, it's like, oh yeah, I have one of those too, you know. And so we can kind of relate to where people are at in a lot of different situations. Also, I'm a pastor. I've been a pastor for about 15 years. And so that's given me some unique experience just in counseling and working with people and working with troubled teens and things like that. And then also last year I got my teaching certificate, and I taught at a public school for just 1 year. And so that gave me some unique experience too. So that's just a little bit about me to give you a feel for why I'm interested in parenting. This particular seminar series, is intended to be kind of non-religious. And the reason that we did that was so that we could invite people from the public school and from the military and things like that. So if you have questions for me kind of outside of the religious stuff, you can sure contact me anytime you want. My number's up there and my address, and I'll show that again at the end. So let's talk about helping your kids wait until marriage. You might think of this as a religious topic. You might think, well, why would you care except for religious reasons? And that is one reason that people care, that their kids don't get involved in premarital sex. But also, promiscuity or premarital sex can really have an impact on a person, how they feel about themselves. It can have impacts as, you know, they get pregnant or things like that. And so just real quickly, I want to go through a few statistics. It says teenage promiscuity has devastating results. On your handouts, basically, I just have your headings, and then if you want to take notes on anything, you're welcome to do that. Some of these results are things that we're going to be already pretty familiar with. 33% of ninth graders have had sex. And so if you go up to the Franklin High School, up to their ninth grade center, and you see these young kids walking out, one out of three have been involved in an intimate relationship. 62% of high school seniors have had sex. And so nearly two-thirds of the kids that are graduating from high school, 14% of high school kids have had four or more sexual partners. So that's pretty significant if you start thinking about 14% of the kids having four partners just in high school, and then you start thinking about, you know, those next few years, you know, even up until they're married, they could pretty easily end up with, you know, a dozen or 20 different partners before you know it. And so that's something to be concerned about. 3 out of 10 girls will be pregnant in their teens. 82% of teen pregnancies are unintended. And perhaps the other 18% are ill-advised. I don't know. So I suppose the other 18%, because when they talk teens, they're not just talking high school. So it could be a 19-year-old that's marrying young, and that's fine. But it could also be, you know, teens that feel kind of incomplete and they want a baby and they're not married, but they really want a baby because they feel like that'll somehow give them purpose in life. And so, yeah, a lot of people getting pregnant, a lot of intimate relationships ending in a place that they didn't really expect or want. That has a lot of impacts. 29% of teen pregnancies end in abortion. Now, whether you are pro-choice or pro-life, either way, I don't think anybody really likes abortion. I don't think anybody's like, you know, oh yeah, it's great and I want that for my kid. It seems like it would be better if we could prevent the pregnancy in the first place. And so you got, what was that previous stat? So 3 out of 10 girls getting pregnant, 29% of those are going to end up in abortion. 2.5% of high school women have abortions. That's pretty significant. So just to help you put that into perspective, so at Franklin High School, there are 3,158 students. Okay, that means that the students that are there right now, by the time each one of those graduates, 79 of them will have had abortions. And so that's a pretty big deal. 48% of new cases of sexually transmitted diseases are from those ages 15 to 24. And then 1 in 4 sexually active teens contracts a sexually transmitted disease every year. And so we can see that there are pretty devastating results for teenage promiscuity. And then in addition to those things, you got to think about just, you know, the emotional damage that could be caused from, you know, ideally we'd want our kids to kind of grow up and get married and stay married and be in this relationship. And instead, a lot of what happens is, you know, they grow up and they get into this relationship that gets really meaningful and really close and really intimate, and then it breaks up. And then they get into another relationship that gets really close and intimate and meaningful, and then it breaks up. And you got to just think, you know, as a parent, I don't want my kid to go through that. I don't want them to have that kind of relationship and then have it breaking all the time. So we want to just think about what causes this, what contributes to premarital sex. And so I'm just going to go through some of these real quickly just to give you an overview, and then we're going to go through each one in more detail. The first thing is just intense, passionate urges. And, I mean, there's just a reality there of, you know, we can come up with whatever thoughts we want and we can have all kinds of education, but there's a reality that we have all experienced and we know it's like, man, that's just a really intense struggle. And so that's not going to be easy to overcome. You know, you can teach your kids that it's wrong, but they're still going to have to make decisions in very difficult circumstances. A fuzzy value system, peer pressure and peer perceptions. Explain what that means a little bit later. Lack of appropriate supervision. Obviously, you don't have sex when you're being watched by your parents. Unmet emotional needs. Valuing short-term benefits over long-term consequences. Just one thing leads to another. I'll explain that a little bit more as we go. And exposure to sexually explicit material. Now, some of these you might look at them and say, well, I don't know. I'm not saying every one of these things always ends up in premarital sex. I'm just saying all these things can contribute to it. And so we want to look at these and see, okay, in each one of these areas, practically, what can I do to help my kids? How can I help prepare them for this? And some of these things are going to relate to, you know, those teen years when this is really hitting. And some of these things are going to relate to just perceptions that we're helping our kids develop even in the younger years. And so this will relate to all of us eventually, but I think there will be things that all of us can apply even now. So let's just go through each one of those. The first one is just the intense, passionate urges. Yeah, that's tough to deal with. I mean, I remember being a high school student, and I remember just, you know, just really, really having strong urges and, you know, just wanting to get those fulfilled, and that's tough. That's kind of what we're up against. You know, everything else is going to be trying to fight this or keep from getting in this place. And so I don't have maybe a great way to combat this one. But the one thing that I would think of would be to keep them tired and busy. So if you have a 16-year-old boy and he's just sitting around the house and he's watching movies and just listening to his iPod all day and doing stuff like that, that's probably not the best situation. It would be better to just work him like a dog. And so if you have a job where you can take your boys to work with you or your kids, or if you can have them pour themselves into a sport or schoolwork or an instrument or something, but keep them busy, keep them occupied. And I'm not saying that, you know, their mind's going to be so full that they're never going to think about sex. They're still going to think about sex. But it's going to help if they're tired and they're occupied in things. and don't just have all kinds of free time to let their mind run. A fuzzy value system. What I mean by that is having values that are real flexible, or, you know, kind of no black and whites and that type of thing. And I recognize that just having a value system is not necessarily going to save your kids in this area. You know, for me, I failed. I made some big mistakes in this area growing up. And I grew up, you know, very conservative Baptist. You know, this is taboo. You know, boys and girls shouldn't be around each other, that type of environment. And I still made some serious mistakes. So it's not like this is a cure-all. But I think it's important to understand that if our kids don't have any value system, if they don't see it as wrong at all, then they're in big trouble. And in this society, they're going to do some things that are going to get them in trouble. I was talking to a teacher a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling me the story of an interaction he had with a male student. And this male student was a high school student, and he was a nice kid. He was a smaller kid, and he had just kind of a real sweet disposition, you know, just kind of looked cute and innocent. And he would go over to girls' houses, and he would meet the parents, and they would really like him, and, you know, oh, he seems so nice, and he looks innocent and stuff. And then he and the girl would go up to the girl's bedroom to study. And so then he would have sex with these girls, and then he would do the same thing at somebody else's house. And because he looked innocent, the parents would, you know, kind of not give it a second thought. And this teacher was talking to this student about this, and the student was asking just morally, you know, is this right or wrong? Because he knew that it was wrong to commit adultery, because he was from a religion where, you know, he believed in the Ten Commandments, and so he thought adultery was wrong. But he thought, well, this girl's not married, so what's wrong with this? And so he was asking this teacher, he's like, so is this wrong? And he was genuinely asking. He really didn't have any idea. And he was telling the teacher about his ideas of what would happen in his life. That he wanted to have children through three different women. And that was just, I don't know why, but I suppose that's what he grew up with or something. And so that was just his idea of what you do when you get older. Well, that's an example of not having a value system. If you don't have any values, that might be what life looks like. Now, obviously, people that have been taught not to engage in premarital sex still mess up, still fall into it. But I don't think we should say that it doesn't have any impact. This study, I thought, was pretty profound. It says in 2004, there's a study published in Social Science and Medicine. Gene Shubler's team found that 18 to 24-year-olds from religious families described how they had developed sophisticated rationales and justifications for their engagement in sexual activity, and that their guilt had not been strong enough to inhibit their sexual behaviors. It's kind of some psychology terms there, or I don't know, sometimes people try too hard to sound smart, but basically what she's saying is people just made up excuses to justify what they were doing. And so, yeah, I know premarital sex is wrong, but it's okay. You guys ever been in that spot? I mean, I remember thinking stuff like that when I was a teen, and you just think, well, yeah, I know I'm not supposed to do this, but I'm in love, and so it's okay. Or I'm going to marry this girl anyway, so it's okay. Or we're practically married anyway. Or maybe in God's eyes we're married. Or, you know, all these things go through somebody's mind when they're wrestling with this issue. And that's what they're saying in this finding, is that yeah, there are these religious systems that say, well, you shouldn't do these behaviors, but then people are doing them anyway and just coming up with reasons in their own mind as to why it's really okay in their situation. And so practically, what can we do for our kids? Well, first of all, if you believe certain behaviors are wrong, you've got to teach that to your kids. You've got to take your belief system and impart that to your kids. And so that could be, it could just be telling them, you know, hey, premarital sex is wrong, if that's your belief system, or if you have a reason for that belief, then you back it up. And so in Christianity or in Catholicism, you would go to the Bible and you'd say, okay, well, according to this verse, this is what the Bible says. And so you help them have reasons, help them know in their own mind why it's wrong. And then I think this is the really key thing. Help your kids think through this is from that quote, sophisticated rationales and justifications. So all those excuses that the kids want to use to explain why it's okay. When your kids are old enough and they're in those relationships that could lead to sex, you explain to them and say, hey, sweetie, you know what? You're going to be tempted in this area, and someday you're going to want to have sex. And you might think right now that, oh, yeah, I wouldn't do that because I'm a good kid and I'll make the right choice. But you're going to have really tough choices to make. And you know what? When you're in that situation, here's some of the things you're going to think. And you just come up with the stuff that I already went over or that are, maybe you used when you were that age. And you go through and you say, you know what? You might think that, you love them, and so it's pretty much like you're married anyway. Well, if that's the case, then just get married. I'll take you to the justice of the peace. You can be married tomorrow, and we're set. And lots of people will say, well, it's just like we're married. But when you talk to them about, okay, well, then let's close the deal, then they're like, oh, well, maybe not. We're waiting. And they start squirming around a little bit. People will say, we're engaged, and so what difference does it make? I remember hearing a story of a young lady that was engaged, and it was the night before her wedding. And her fiancé and her were getting intimately involved. And, of course, what do you think in the night before your wedding? 24 hours. What difference does it make? Right? That's what you would think if you're in that situation. And that's what she thought. What difference does it make if we have sex today or we have sex tomorrow? That would be the temptation, right? Well, she went ahead and they had a relationship. After they had an intimate relationship, her fiance left and she never saw him again. And this was from kind of the olden days when that was a bigger deal. And, of course, she got pregnant, and everybody found out she was pregnant, and she wasn't married, and so she was kind of kicked out of her family, and it turned into a very big deal. I remember when I was in college, I was at a concert, and a gal got up, and she told a story. It was really a similar story, that she had a boyfriend that kept pestering her, well, if you really love me, you would have sex with me, and he's going on and on like that, and so finally she gave in. And she had sex with him, and that was the end of it. She never heard from him again. He never called. He never returned calls. And so it's easy to think, well, it doesn't really matter. Or what's marriage? It's just a piece of paper. Why do I need the piece of paper? All these excuses, all these thoughts are things that kids will wrestle with. So even if they're taught the right values, they've got to learn, you're going to be in this situation. These are the things you're going to think, and you've got to realize that these thoughts are not true. Okay, peer pressure and peer perceptions. So peer pressure, I just saw a video of a gal that was telling a story of her life, and she was in high school, and she had been dating a boy for a year. And so somehow this came up. She was talking to another boy, and he said, so, you guys have been dating for a year? Wow, that's a really long time. So you guys have had sex? And she said, no, we haven't had sex. I'm not that kind of girl. And he said, well, I would dump you if you were my girlfriend. How does your boyfriend know that you love him if you won't have sex? And so it was this real intense pressure. And so she felt kind of pulled into this. And so she talked it over with her boyfriend and ended up just making some stupid mistakes. And then when you think about peer perceptions, what that means is it's your peers, your classmates, the people that are around you, what do you think they're doing? And so if a kid thinks that all the other kids are having sex and they're the only one that's not, then that's going to be really difficult for them. And those perceptions, those thoughts about what other people are doing can really impact them. So this says, the American Public Health Association reports Psychology Today did a study and found that one of the biggest reasons teenagers engage in sexual activity is because they think their peers are also having sex. Okay? So in my parents' or my grandparents' time, you know, I'm sure that sexual temptation was still there and that people still failed and had problems in this area. I mean, I'm sure since the beginning of time that's been a problem. But it's different back then when everybody in society thought, you know, well, you really shouldn't do this. You've got to wait till marriage. But now in society, it's so accepted and so normal for our kids to be engaged in sex. When a kid looks around and they think everybody else is doing this, it's going to cause problems. Think about when you're in high school or in middle school. Remember what that felt like? You know, you feel insecure, you feel like a loser, you know, you get a little zit and it's this big and you feel like it's this big, or, you know, you start worrying about the silliest things. And, you know, I remember liking this girl, my friend looking at her, and he's like, well, she has fat wrists. Like, and now I'm 45 and I look back, I still don't know what that means, you know, how can you have fat wrists, or why is that a big deal? But, you know, you're just looking at everything, and everybody's judging that way, and so you're always real self-conscious that you're being judged. And so if you're in high school and you think everybody else is doing this thing except me, that's going to be a really intense pressure. They also said one of the factors that increases the perception that peers are having sex is media content. So they turn on the radio, and I don't know, what, 2 out of 3 songs are about sex? You turn on the TV. How many of the jokes are about sex? How many of the kids their age are engaged romantically or engaged in sex? Or there are teen magazines, and how many of the stories relate to that? Or how do people dress? You know, is it all sexual? And then obviously, of course, TV and movies. What are they seeing? What are the other kids my age doing on the screen? And they get all this input and they think, well, that's what everybody must be doing. So, practically, let them know that not everyone's having sex. You can just tell them that, you know. You can say, hey, buddy, I know that you go to school and people are talking about sex and it seems like everybody's having sex, everybody's not having sex. So in the high school, a lot of people are, maybe 50% of the people, if you kind of average between the 9th grade and the 12th grade, you know, roughly that number, but not everybody. Of course, all the people that are having sex are talking about it, and there's gossip and stuff, and so that's why it seems like everybody's having sex. It's not like people come to school and be like, yeah, I didn't have sex this weekend, you know. People aren't talking about that. All they talk about is that they're having it, and so that gives that perception. So just let your kids know, you know, you are going to have to be different than the other kids, and you're going to have to kind of be willing to stand alone, but you're not really alone. There are a lot of other people that are making the same choices. And then obviously, don't let them be exposed to a lot of media that shows values that are different from those you want your kids to have. And it's really easy to do. It's really easy for a TV to become a babysitter. You know, hey kid, you know, go watch the TV for a couple hours. And it's hard not to do that because it's so easy to do. But it's dangerous. And so as a parent, I just, you know, I challenge you to be in there and be involved and take that time to know what they're reading. Be willing to be conservative. I know I'm ultra conservative. But it's for a reason. It's because I really want to protect my kids. I really want to make sure that they have the best chance in life that I can give them. And then, of course, on the opposite end, do expose them to media with values similar to your own. Sometimes it's helpful to watch TV from the 1950s or the 1960s, or to read books that are classics, that are old, that kind of relate to a different day and age when promiscuity was not the norm. And so those are ways that you can help your kids to deal with the peer pressure. Okay, lack of appropriate supervision. Again, obviously, if somebody was with your kid all the time, you know, if you were able to, you know, hold their hand all the way through life, they would never have sex. If somehow you can, watch your kids closely is going to help greatly. I want to talk about dating just a little bit. My voice is starting to squeak. I want to think about, what is the purpose for dating? Is it so that they can learn how to get along with somebody else and to have a meaningful relationship? And if that's the case, is that something they can learn somewhere else? Can they learn that with their friends? Can they learn that with their brothers and sisters? Can they learn that at playgroup or in a church group or with other people that you meet with? Or is that something that has to be in that close, intimate relationship? I mean, when I think about it, really, the main purpose for dating would really be to decide if you want to marry somebody. And so if that's the purpose for dating, then when should a kid start to enter into that decision? And, you know, a 15-year-old, are they really in a place to get married? Is there a great reason for them to be dating other than that all their friends are dating? And so these are things you want to kind of think through with your kids. And even, let's say, in the ideal situation, let's say your 15-year-old finds somebody that they do end up marrying. Well, then they don't get married till 18. So from 15 years old to 18 years old, they're in this relationship with this person that they're eventually going to marry. How's that going to work? Well, I can tell you, they're going to have sex. 3 years is a really long time. I mean, there's going to be some exceptions, but generally, that's just the way it's going to go. And so in my mind, what would be ideal would be to wait a little bit longer on that and see if you can hold that off some, and basically just not get things stirred up that don't need to be stirred up yet. So just practically, you want to think through, what age should your kids start dating? Or should they date at all? My thought would be, there's really no point in them being involved in a serious relationship until they're of that age that they could do something with it. The reason you can have sex is so that you can have kids, you know, so you can have, I mean, there's other reasons too, you can have fun, but it's for this purpose of marriage. And so is there any purpose to, or any point in going into that until the kids are 18? I know that sounds terribly old, but I'm kind of conservative, but that's something that you guys need to figure out as a family. What kind of dating is acceptable? So let's say you decide, yeah, it's okay for my 15-year-old to date. Well, that's fine. That's your decision as a parent. But what's that look like? You know, when I was a kid, what that looked like is, you know, we would go off together. We would go to football games. We would go out for pizza. We would go roller skating. And we would basically go away from our parents by ourselves. And then sometimes we would sneak off and be alone. And well, does it have to be that way? Is there a safer way to do that? Could you say, yeah, sweetie, you know, your girlfriend can come over and she needs to come over to the house and, you know, we can sit around and play board games with mom and dad. And even when you think about that story that I told earlier about that teacher and the kids going off to the bedroom to study, you know, just think through stuff like that. Don't allow your kids behind closed doors. It's just asking for trouble. So think through, what kind of dating do you want to allow? Today's day and age, this is just one example, I guess, but cell phones, web, Facebook, stuff like that, be careful, you know, because kids do all kinds of things. Actually, one of the stories I told earlier about the girl who was being teased into having sex with her boyfriend, she didn't actually have sex, but she sent naked pictures of herself to him. I think his parents eventually found out, and then her mom found out, and then, you know, she got in big trouble, and they broke up, and it was a big mess. But, you know, in my day and age, that just wasn't a problem, because nobody had cell phones, and nobody had internet, nobody, you know. And today, you've got to be on top of that stuff as a parent. You've got to realize that kids are doing this stuff, and you've got to realize that as a kid gets pulled in like that, man, those are just going to be huge, massive temptations that will be really hard to overcome. okay, this is a really big deal. Unmet emotional needs. So, let's just think again about why people have sex. Okay, so the very first one, you know, basically what we were thinking of is, well, kids, they just have these intense, passionate urges. That's the number one reason to have sex, right? Okay, but I want you to think about that a little bit more. Is it just sexual? Is that all kids are looking for is sexual release? Okay, let me just say one thing real frankly, because I think it'll just help you think through it. Okay, if all kids are looking for is sexual release, they can take care of that by themselves. Okay, most kids do that. Most kids can take care of their sexual release if that's all they're looking for. But there's more. They want to be with somebody else. They want this intimacy. And so if you think about it, again, let's go back to high school. You're in high school and you feel like a loser. You know, you feel like you're too short, or you feel like you're too fat, or your hair's not quite as cool as everybody else's, or they're all athletic and you're not, and nobody likes you, and that's just how high schoolers feel. How nice would it be to have somebody that loves you? You know, to have somebody who is willing to say, I'll be your boyfriend or I'll be your girlfriend. And that's a lot of what kids are up against. And so what I'm saying is it's not just sexual. There's also an emotional part to it. There's an emotional connection that's made when people have sex. And so kids are getting into these relationships not just because they want to have sex, but because they have emotional needs that they want to get filled. They want somebody to love them. They want to feel special. They want to feel like they fit in. You know, at least one other person in the world will accept them for who they are. And they feel like having sex kind of gives them that. And so it meets an emotional need. Our oldest daughter, Hope, she's 15. And we homeschooled her up through eighth grade. And so this last year, she went to Franklin High School. And it's her first experience in public school. And after, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks of school or so, she came back. And she was so hard to watch all the boyfriends and girlfriends in the hallway. And just, you know, you could just tell she's kind of getting pulled a little bit, like, oh, it'd be kind of nice to have a boyfriend. And so we're talking to her about this. And, you know, what, you know, why is that attractive to you? What are you thinking? And she's like, well, I miss being touched. Well, of course, in our home, she's touched all the time. We hug her, and there's eight kids, so you're always getting hugged by somebody or kissed or licked, or, you know, that's just part of her home life. But all of a sudden, she was taken out of that, and now she's in that spot where it's like, I just want to be touched, which is another way of saying, I want to be loved. I want to be accepted. And so that's just a little snapshot of what goes through a kid's mind, and you can see how every kid would want to fit in. Every kid would want to have a boyfriend or girlfriend and to be intimate in that relationship. So some of that relates back to our view of ourselves, our self-worth, our self-identity, how we view ourselves. And so a question I want you to think through is, what makes you valuable as a person? What makes you valuable as a person? In our society, what it is it's typically what other people think of us. You know, if other people think I'm cool or I'm athletic or I'm good-looking or I'm intelligent or I'm funny or whatever, then that makes my identity. Okay? And that's what kids are looking for a lot in these relationships, is they're looking for this identity. They want these emotional needs met. Okay? But our identity has to come from something bigger than that. And that's what we have to teach our kids. Our identity has to come down to their very core. You know, what makes you special? And I'm not actually going to give you the answer to that unless you talk to me afterwards, just because I promised that these talks would be pretty non-religious, and I would have to go into religious things to explain that. But I think that's important for you to think through. And even in your own life, do you know what makes you special? So, practically, Make sure you tell your kids you love them and tell them often. Again, as a pastor, I've counseled different people. I've had troubled teens come and talk to me and stuff. And one of the questions I'll ask them sometimes, you know, do you know that your parents love you? And they're like, yeah, I know. Have they ever told you that they love you? Yeah. Well, how many times have they told you? I don't know, 3 times. 3 times a year? 3 times ever? Like, what? Don't do that to your kids. You know, tell them you love them, and tell them often. Use those words. Say, I love you. You know, if you put them down for bed, I love you, sweetie. I love you, buddy. You know, use those words. That's really important for them to hear that and to hear it often. When you were a kid, wouldn't you have liked to have heard that from your dad? Wouldn't you have liked to have heard that from your mom? Well, do that for your kids. It might be awkward the first couple times you do it if you haven't been in the habit of doing that, but make sure you do that. And then show physical affection. Just like the story I told about our daughter Hope. You know, just make sure you're hugging your kids, you're, you know, just putting your arm around them, you're giving them a goodnight kiss or whatever it is. Show physical affection. I think this is particularly important for dads to show, because the dads tend to be the ones who are less emotional and less affectionate, and you know, we tend to be a little bit firmer and to maybe butt heads with our kids a little bit more. And so it's really important for dads to come alongside, you know, give your girl a hug. I love you, sweetie. I miss you. You know, I'm glad you're back from school. Just whatever. Just look for every opportunity to do that. I remember as a kid, I have a specific memory of sitting in church and my dad putting his arm around me and just thinking, kind of, that's kind of cool. You know, and I think he probably did it frequently, but I remember having that thought. You know, and that's weird that, you know, like 40 years later, that would still stick out in my mind, that he used to do that. It's no big deal. You know, it doesn't, I don't know, I think we're so worried about men, you know, we don't want to look like girls or something, or, you know, it's okay. You can put your arm around your son. You can put your arm around your girl. You can be affectionate, and that doesn't take away from your manhood at all. And then teach your kids where their value comes from. If you don't know, figure it out. And if you do know, make sure you teach it to your kids. You've got to have a value outside of what other people think of you. If your value's caught up in what other people think of you, then you're going to be an emotional wreck your whole life. Okay, this one's really difficult. Valuing short-term benefits over long-term consequences. In other words, the kids really like having sex because it feels good, and they value that over all the bad things that could happen in the future. And this is difficult for all of us. That's why it's hard to say no to a candy bar now, because I'm going to get fatter later. It's like, well, who cares about later? I want the candy bar now. You know, it's hard to study for a test now so that I'll get a good grade later. You know, well, I'd rather take a nap, or I'd rather play games, or I'd rather watch a movie. Or, you know, it's always hard to exchange those short-term and long-term things. It's hard to get something done now when we could procrastinate and do it later. So let's think through what the short-term benefits of sex are. These are the things that are in their minds. It's awesome. It's hard to argue with that. Okay, it communicates love. Okay, it does. There's some validity to that. There are certainly other ways to communicate love. It's not like the classic, the boy saying, well, if you really love me, you'd have sex with me. It's like, well, if you really love me, you wouldn't ask me to have sex with you. You know, there are other ways to communicate love. It meets needs. It meets sexual needs. It meets some emotional needs. That's true. But we need to be sure that our legitimate needs are met legitimately. So we need to find correct ways to meet our needs, not incorrect ways. So let's look at some of the negative consequences or some of the costs. I already mentioned STDs, sexually transmitted diseases. Pregnancy, which often, was it about a third of the time, leads to abortion. And those are big costs. But maybe some things that people don't think of as much. Loss of a clear conscience. You know, that's a big deal. I mean, we're all old enough that you've probably been in a spot where you're like, I really want to do this thing that's wrong. I mean, I really, really want to do this thing that's wrong. And you feel yourself kind of getting pulled into doing something that's wrong, and you really want to do it, and then as soon as you do it, you feel like garbage. Like, oh man, I shouldn't have done that. Well, that's the way it is with premarital sex. These kids get into a place where they engage in a behavior and then they have this guilt afterwards. We need to help our kids understand that, you know, that's something that you have to deal with. It's not just that it's fun. It is fun, but it comes with other consequences. Losing something special, and that's something I think most kids have learned. You know, they have their virginity. They only have it once. As soon as you lose it, it's gone. Ideally, I think most people would think it would be kind of nice to lose that with your soulmate. You know, to have sex for the first time with the person that you're going to marry. I think most everybody would agree that's the ideal. They probably don't think about this. Jealousy and fears later in marriage. Okay, so if the person that you marry is the only person you've ever slept with, and you're the only person they've ever slept with, then we don't have a lot of problems with old girlfriends and stuff. And then let's go to an extreme example. Let's say you marry somebody that has had sex with 100 people. Okay, well, that's an extreme example, but now we got problems, you know? Because then you're like, well, how do I rank in there? And how do I know that you really love me when you've been in all these other relationships? And you know, it just creates a lot of complication. And then, you know, okay, well, let's go back to maybe more normal. Well, how do I rank when you've had this relationship with 6 other people or 15 other people? It puts this pressure on a marriage. And again, I've done marriage counseling before. When marriage breaks, one of the things that breaks is their sex life. That makes sense. I mean, almost always. That's part of the problem. It's one of the signs of a broken marriage. So it just makes sense. They're not getting along, so why would they get along in this very intimate part of their relationship? Well, lots of times the woman will say, you know, well, I feel like he just uses me. He just uses me for sex. He only shows me attention because he wants sex. In fact, if I look back through our relationship, this is all he's ever wanted. In fact, when we were dating, that was all he really wanted. And it seems like he was all about that then. You know, he talked me into having sex when I knew that I didn't want to. That's an impact. Now, that's an impact a 15-year-old is not going to think about, but that's an impact. And so we need to talk through this with our kids and help them understand, you know, when they're that age that they're starting to date or starting to get serious, help them understand these are some of the impacts. This is what you're up against. Here's another impact they are never going to think about, is their example with their own kids later on in life. You know, I would love to tell my kids and say, hey guys, you know what? You need to wait until marriage like I did. You need to be pure and wait. I can't do that. Now, my wife can, so that's good, so I'll let her have that talk, but I can't do that. So that's a consequence. So someday, they're going to be in that spot that I'm in now. They're going to be in that spot where they're trying to say, hey, sweetie, you really shouldn't do this. Well, I did, but you shouldn't. It's a consequence that they are never going to think of without you helping them. So help them think through these costs. Help them understand that it's not just about feeling good for a few minutes, that it's a lot more than that. This is really important. Understanding that one thing leads to another. You cannot just say, I am not going to have sex. And that's my line. I will not cross that line, but I'll go everything up until that line. That's not going to work. It's just not going to work. I remember when I was a kid, this is another one of those weird memories that's kind of seared into my conscience. There was a culvert, a big pipe that went under this road, and it was big enough that at least as kids we could walk through it without ducking down all this great big huge thing. And then at the end, it came down and it had kind of a vertical concrete wall, and it had a spillway with the water coming down it. There wasn't very much water, but it was enough that kind of this whole spillway was wet. And then there was this little concrete path right next to the water, about this wide, and it was at a slant. And I can't remember why, but we wanted to jump down and walk through the pipe or do something. For some reason, we were trying to jump down. And so I got on that vertical wall, and I'm hanging there, and I jumped down, and I landed on that little slant, and I couldn't catch my balance, and I stepped back onto the slanted part. And I fell down, and it was just all slimy, and it was like I just didn't have a chance. And it was just this feeling of just kind of going, you know, sliding down, and you're just like looking like for a cartoon, like a little tree to grab onto or something. And there's just nothing there, and you're just sliding down. It's just, there's no hope. And I think there's a point in sexual intimacy that it gets kind of like that. Not that you ever get to a point that you can't stop and make the right choice, but that gets harder and harder and harder. So you're kissing, you're making out, you're laying in bed, you're topless, you're naked, you're groping each other. Okay, so let's stop now. That doesn't work very well. You could, but you're kind of on that slippery slope, and it's getting harder and harder and harder and harder to stop. And when I've done premarital counseling with people before, I've talked through this, and I just figure it's just better to just be open about stuff like this. And I have a little sheet of paper, and it lists out all that stuff. It's like, okay, where do you want to draw the line? We're not going to have sex? That's not going to work. Well, we're not going to go down each other's pants. We're not going to lay in bed together naked. We're not going to fondle each other's upper body. You know, where do you guys want to draw that line? Because the further down you draw it, the greater chance you have of not doing well. And so it's an awkward conversation, but it's something that I think is really helpful for people. They have to understand that concept. Here's a picture of a guy on some kind of a slippery slide thing. It's like this. It's just, if you really, really, really don't want to go down this slide, where should you stand? Well, you can't even really see where you should stand. You should be clear back in here somewhere. You know, if you really don't want to go down the slide, don't stand right here. You know, don't get right on the edge. Don't try to stand right in the middle. That's what we try to do because, you know, I mean, remember as a kid, it's like, well, I'm not going to have sex. I'm not going to go down here, that's for sure. But I think I'm going to try to go right about here, and then I'll stop. Yeah, that worked really well. You know, you just can't do that. And so help them think through this question. How far is too far? We know having sex is too far. We know probably laying in bed together naked is too far. So where do you want to draw that line? No kissing, no holding hands, I don't know. It's hard to figure that out, but you want to think through that, and you want to help your kids think through that. Last one, exposure to sexually explicit materials, pornography, stuff on the web, stuff on their iPhones, all different kinds of areas. I know this could be one that, you know, we look at, it's like, well, we all saw pornography at some time in our life, right? And that didn't mean that we all had premarital sex. And so I'm not saying that it always leads to this. I'm just saying that there is some impact on the way that we think from what we've seen. So let me give you an example. I'll give you an extreme example. So I knew a guy that was raised in a house where his dad had hardcore pornography available on videotapes. And of course, whenever dad was out of town, then this kid would watch these videotapes. And these were available from the time he was born. I don't know when he started watching them, you know, probably when he was 5 or 6, something like that. So this kid grows up and he has this perverted view of sexuality and of what normal sexuality should be like. Well, he ends up becoming a sexual predator and ends up in this spot where he is in legal trouble and his life is a mess because he did something that was just completely gross and offensive. If there's one crime that our society takes serious, that's it. If you want to get busted for anything, don't let that be it, because they are very serious, and they come down on you for that. To me, I look at it, it's like, he did the wrong thing. He was a jerk. He really was, for doing what he did. But his dad, you know, it's just like, you idiot. How can you let this kid grow up with hardcore pornography in the house? What are you thinking? What a stupid decision for him to make. we look at that and we say, okay, in this extreme situation, we can, I hope everybody can see, yeah, that probably impacts somebody to grow up with that. Okay, so most people don't grow up with that. But if we look at an extreme situation and say, yeah, that could impact somebody, well, then you look at a less extreme situation and say, yeah, that could impact somebody too. Probably not to the same degree, but it could impact them to some degree. And so we just want to think through, okay, what are kids getting exposed to, and how is that going to impact what they think? Even like a man's view of a woman. Pornography, I think, tends to, it's not just, in my mind, it's not just, well, it's a beautiful art form. Yes, women are beautiful, but creates this perception of them being kind of property and them being something to be used for their own gratification. And it creates this unreal perception of what a woman looks like. And so they've seen all these pictures of women who have been airbrushed and they've been given fake breasts and all kinds of implants and stuff. And it took them 4 hours to do their hair, and then they did the photo shoot and they touched up anything they didn't like. And that's their perception. You know, then the poor guy gets married and he's like looking at his wife like, wow, her breasts aren't the size of half of a football, or, you know. They have these distorted perceptions. And this messes with their minds. And so we want to be careful about what our kids are exposed to. The average child is first exposed to internet pornography at 11 years old. You don't even have to go for it. You know, it just shows up on your email. And then you're just a few clicks away. I was sitting behind my son, my oldest son, Blaze. There were actually like six of us in the room. And I don't remember what he clicked on, but just all of a sudden it was like, and just the screen was just full of these pictures. And it's like, ah! And you know, I ran over and shut off the computer. And we had some virus or something, or a worm in the computer. And it was just downloading just all kinds of stuff. And it was just so graphic that he was like, I don't even know what I was looking at. It's like, well, that's good, you know. And it's just there. Boy, we got to be careful. 80% of 15 to 17-year-olds have had multiple exposures to hardcore pornography. I don't know how they define hardcore, but it's not Playboy. Very graphic, very explicit. So we need to realize that our kids are up against that. Just practically, what do? Supervise our kids. We have to be there. We have to be watching our kids. We need to know what TV shows they're watching, what movies they're watching, what books they're reading, what magazines come into the house. We've got to be on top of all that. When our kids go over to our friend's house, maybe you shouldn't even do that. Or you need to be there. You need to know what's at the friend's house. Just because somebody is religious, or because somebody is a school official, or somebody that you wouldn't think would have pornography, doesn't mean that they don't. I remember growing up, and I went over to my friend's house, and the school superintendent lived like three doors down from my friend. And so my friend and I went over to see his son, who was about our age, maybe a year or two older. We went up into his room in the upstairs. In the back of his closet, he had kind of a little secret door that went out into the attic. And in the attic, the school superintendent had his boxes full of dirty magazines. And so then we would pull them out and look at them and stuff. This is at the school superintendent's house. So as a parent, don't think, you know, oh, this place is safe or that place is safe. You've got to be really careful. Or I remember our kids. They were over at a friend's house, and from that friend's house, they went over to the neighbors, and in their garage, they had a pinup or something, and our kids came back and let us know this. And, you know, our neighbor was totally shocked. They're like, oh, or our friend, like, oh, we had no idea. You know, we thought that these people would never have something like that. So you've got to keep a close eye on your kids, because that stuff's all over the place. Teach them what to look for in a spouse. You know, what you're looking for is not a 10. You're not looking for the perfect babe. You're not looking for what you see on TV. You're looking for a person that loves you, that's kind, that has character. Because if we expose our kids to too much media, they don't see any of that. All they see is looks. And so we have to help our kids understand that there's a lot more to marriage than that, and that most of us look pretty normal. So really, that's it for tonight. Next week, we're going to be talking about developing a meaningful faith. That might seem kind of weird since these are supposed to be somewhat non-religious. But I'm not going to even be talking about specific religion. Obviously, I think anybody that comes would value faith. But I thought through most of the talk, and I think there'd be some stuff that would be really helpful. So I encourage you to come to that. And in any of the future seminars, I encourage you to come to them. Don't think, well, I don't think my kid's rebellious, or they're not a teen yet, or my kids would never get involved in the cartel. A lot of these things will relate to other aspects of parenting. And so I encourage you to just come to as many of these as you can, because I really think they'll help you as you're helping your kids go through life. You guys ever have any questions, feel free to give us a call or to email us. And as I mentioned last week, the things on the bottom, these are our prices. So if you really want a lot of input, you have to take us out for pizza or buy us coffee. Or maybe ice cream. And then just real quickly, I just want to invite you to our church. If you are looking for a church home, we would love to have you visit. We meet here at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings. And we're currently going through a series called High Voltage. It's just helping people apply the teachings of Jesus to everyday life. And so I guess that's it. Does anybody have any questions? What age do we start talking to our kids about sex? Ideally, I think I would want to wait till about 13. What we found is the kids just start hearing stuff and becoming curious about stuff. And I think for our two older ones, we talked to them at 11. And our third, we haven't had our three oldest, we've talked to them at 11. And our fourth, we haven't had that talk with yet. Basically, like our kids just in the church, and just our kids have a habit of reading the Bible every day. And so they come up with stories of, you know, all kinds of different things that relate to sexual activity. You know, somebody getting raped or people in illegitimate relationships or just all kinds of different things. And so they start having questions. And so we have a talk with them, and we just try to explain it pretty matter-of-factly. I'm pretty blunt with them. Just like tonight, I'll say things that are just, I just feel like they need to be said. I'll be pretty blunt with them and direct. And then we usually try to follow up with that a little bit and ask them, you know, so that talk we had the other day, what do you think of that? And, you know, they're squirming because the idea of your parents having sex is really gross. And so they just don't want to think about this. All right, thanks for your time, guys. There are more treats and snacks and stuff. And I hope you can make it back.